Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am a Jito Ryo master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Hey there, my Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas, Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to my 25th episode. That's right, today we hit a landmark, episode 25. And on the 25th episode, I'm going to cover an anime that I enjoyed very, very much. I've watched it many, many times. I watched it on fan subs when it came out initially in, I want to say it was 2008 originally came out. The second season came out in 2010, but we're covering that next week. But yeah, 2008, just off by a year, but you know, still, it's one of my favorite anime. I watched it when it came out. I watched it in fan subs. I've watched it subtitled. I watched it dubbed. I never get tired of it because it's always enjoyable to watch, and that is Sekiri. Sekiri is a harem anime series, like I said, that came out in 2008. That has a lot of action, some great comedy, and some very nice visuals, but we'll get to all of that when we review. We have no emails or iTunes comments or Facebook comments, so we're just going to get right into synopsis and cast. First, let's go over cast, and of course, this is the dub cast, this series being dubbed by Funimation. First, we have Joe McDonald as Minato Shashi, Alexis Tipton as Musubi, Tia Ballard as Kusano, Colleen Klinkenbeard, as probably many fans know as Risa Hawkeye in Fullmetal Alchemist, plays Matsu. Lita McKay plays Tsukumi. Stephanie Young plays Kazahana. Leia Clark plays Homura. Monica Rial plays Mia Asama. Jamie Marchi plays Uzumi. And Chuck Huber plays Hiroto Minaka. Of course, as I said last week, you know, or should I say our review of Baka and Test last week, you know, Alexis Tipton was Himeji. Leia Clark played the second love interest, and of course Jamie Marchi was there as well. Joe McDonald also played a small character on that show, so we have some of the voice actors from last week back again. On to synopsis. In Tokyo, known as Shinto Tetsuro in the, you know, the new Eastern Imperial Capital in 2020, 19-year-old Minato Shashi has failed his college entrance exams twice. He is also inept around women and is unemployed and is continuously bullied by his mother, Takami, and his younger sister, Yukia. In truth, Minato is highly intelligent, yet his inability to cope under pressure results in his constant failures and has been insulted by several people. One day, Minato meets a girl named Musubi who literally falls from the sky. Minato soon learns that she is a Sekiri who chose him as her Ashikabe, a human with special genes that allows them to mark in the form of contract with Sekiris. This binds the Sekiri to him and allows them to use their full power in elimination battle with other Sekiris. Sekiris fight in dangerous and sometimes deadly competitions known as the game or the Sekiri plan organized by Hiroto Minaka, the chairman and founder of the mysterious and powerful MBI Corporation. Minato soon learns that being the partner of a beautiful girl is not all fun and games, especially when several other secretaries choose him as their Ashikabe, each also forming a contract with him. Now Minato must find a way to survive both life-threatening battles of the secretary plans and his partner's fierce competition for him. So yeah, it's a wonderful series. One thing I didn't add in the plot synopsis that it was that they formed the bond by kissing. Let's create some funny moments as well, but yeah, it's an enjoyable series, and we'll get right into that as we get into our review. And speaking of which, let's get into our review of Sekiri. Started on how we usually do here at Tom's Prerogative. You know how we do that, do. Because I do the do. Do you do the do? I'm getting ridiculous now. Let's get on to review, and as we always do, we start with music. And let's start off by talking about Sekiri's opening and closing themes. And I love these themes. Now, I'm going to add to a bit. There is a second closing theme in both this and the second season. Both in each season, there is for one episode, there is a special ending in each season, and that second ending theme is used for that. They're both take place during some very sorrowful episodes, and so they are very sort of sorrowful songs, and they're very good. Enjoy them. They're not as good as the songs so I'm going to talk about. I love the opening and ending songs of this anime. They're absolutely incredible. They both do exactly what they do. The fun thing about this are these openings, and in fact, they do this for both the second season as well, so we'll get into that when we cover it next week. But for right now, with the opening and outro songs for Sekiri, both are performed by actually the Japanese voice actors. They're performed by the voice actors of Musubi, Tsukumi, Kusunano, and Matsu. The song titles, the opening theme's title is titled Sekiri, and the ending theme is titled Dear Sweetheart. Well, first, let's focus on the opening theme. I love this theme. It has a great tune. I love sort of the opening notes of it on piano. It gets you very much excited for what's going to happen. It really fits sort of the sort of sort of is a word, but it really fits the theming, I think, of the show, which I think is really, really important. And just overall, it has some great melodies in it, and the singers do a great job singing it. They're on, again, we have four different singers singing, and the perfect harmony, and there's just a joyfulness and a hopefulness within the song that is translated throughout the series. The song is a direct translation of sort of the sort of themes of hope and destiny and that stuff that are portrayed in the series as well. So I very much enjoy that. Now, with that being said, I enjoy the closing theme, I actually think, better than I do the opening theme. And like I said, I love the opening theme, but I love sort of the closing theme and just these upbeat, uplifting, joyful songs, you know, get the funky, you know, before I start singing it, why don't I play a bit of it for you right now? Sort of, you know, they start off and then it goes, get the funky beat, that that's it, that is very sort of Motown funk. I love it. It's absolutely, I mean, it's not your sort of stereotypical Japanese ending. It's just very pop, you know, very joyful, very happy, upbeat ending theme, and they just love watching it. And of course, the animation during it is absolutely funny, especially when it gets to the part where they show the Sekiris as guys dragging Minato around, and it's the imagination of Musubi, which is absolutely hilarious. But you know, it's just up, and in fact, I got to admit to you, this is, by the way, how sick my mind works. I have this image of President Obama with his chief of staff in a Super Duper singing this song. And then he's got all his achievements going behind him. I have no life. I really don't. I have no life. But, it's just a joyful, upbeat song, and I very much enjoy it. I love the melody. Like I said, I love this sort of Motown funk that comes out of this song. It makes me excited for the next episode and want to watch the next episode. It's, like I said, it's that reverse of sort of the traditional Japanese opening system to where you have the pop song at the beginning and sort of more downplayed song, more serious song at the end. Here it's sort of the other way around. And again, it all depends on how you do it and if you can make it work. And here they're able to make it work with great success. In the overall series, there's actually some very good songs as well. I definitely would pick up this CD just to listen also as well to some of the music in this series. The fight music I very much enjoy. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Again, there's sort of plays there off the opening theme within it. Some of the more comedic music during the comedy scenes are just, they feel fresh, you know. One could sit there and say, well, it's music to where you would typically hear in a comedy. It's upbeat and uplifting. It does, but it feels fresh, and somehow they're able to make it feel, and I can't put my finger on why, but it just feels fresh, and it feels unique to this series. You know, I could hear this music and think about this series. It's one of those things to where And I think it has to do with the complete package. Everything works well with each other. All the ingredients here in the pot, you know, animation, music, story, especially during the comedy scenes, are melded together perfectly. And, you know, one doesn't take center stage over the other. They all influence each other, and they all enhance each other. And the music's a perfect example of that. It never takes center stage. It does nothing but pretty much enhance the rest of the show. But at the same point in time, it does stand on its own as very unique. And I very much enjoy that. Again, it never overpowers anything else. But you can, if you definitely are listening more towards the music, definitely hear unique and fresh sounds that just pop. A wonderful job of the composing team of that. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear a promo. And when we come back, we're going to move on to animation.
Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. Presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And we're back, and let's get right into animation, shall we? First, we're going to start off by talking about the overall style of Sekri. This is a very, very unique and interesting style. First off, the first word that comes to mind is a soft art style. You know, soft line work, soft, rounded sort of faces and everything. A lot of use of watercolors. I mean, it's very detailed and everything, but almost a sort of watercolor consistency sometimes within the artwork itself. It's very, like I said, the best word I can find to describe it is sort of soft. I mean, soft colors, soft line work, soft design, just, and every design is, I think, perfectly fits each character. I just find the artwork a beauty to look at, whether, you know, its backgrounds or anything like that. I think it makes the show very, very interesting. It makes the show stand out, which I applauded on. You know, it did something different, and it was able to achieve it. I really do like the art style in this series. I think it makes the series very, very unique. And that's a good thing. Let's move on to character designs. Let's start off with Minato. And thank God he's able to make the L look work. I mean, that's my first thought when I think of him is L from Death Note. But here is, I think, the look working. And again, I think a lot of that also has to do with acting and the way the character is portrayed in the story. But again, it's that simple white shirt and jeans look, and he's able to make it work. And I kind of like how it's sort of the plainness of it is sort of representative of his character's personality. In fact, that can be pretty much said for all of the designs. That they do a great job of representing the character's personality. With Minato, it sort of the way he is designed, the way sometimes he's always slouched over and everything. I love how that sort of represents sort of his lack of confidence, which is really his one problem. But we'll get to more of that when we talk about the individual characters and that stuff. But yeah, I very much enjoy his design. I think he makes a great protagonist. Moving on to Musubi, I love her design. I love the bubbly personality that you can feel within her design. And just sort of a joyfulness, you know. I think the short hair works perfectly for that with the ponytail. I think it's the perfect in-between design because, you know, later on, Minato will get secretaries that are more voluptuous and less voluptuous. And I think Musubi is just perfectly right in the middle there. And like I said, I love sort of the color scheme as well, the pink and the white. Again, I think it perfectly sort of represents that innocence and that bubbly personality that Musubi is. Moving on to Kasano, I love just the plain innocence in her design. You know, the blonde sort of almost wild hair and in the white dress. There's a sort of purity there about her character in her design. And she's just so cute in so many scenes. It's a joy to watch. I really love how they use Kusano in this series. Moving on to Matsu. Again, another good design. And it's so different, and yet it fits, again, the personality. It's very somewhat dirty old man, perverted personality of Matsu. With the glasses and the braids and everything. And it, again, I also love the color scheme here. So the reddish-orange hair. Another white dress. And again, I think the reddish hair, again, that sort of wild, mysterious, mischievous personality of hers is represented in that sort of orange-red-white color scheme. And I very much enjoy it. The big glasses, it leads to a lot of comedy. On to Tsukumi, the water secretary and the Tsunade of the show. Again, color scheme represents her personality as a Tsunade. You know, it's sort of a black and white. Not just in the fact that she's a Tsunade, but in the fact that she's... Her personality is a character that is very black and white. You know, she's either on one side or the other. And she's very confident in that opinion. And she does sort of view the world to an extent black and white. It takes the others sort of opening her up to many shades of gray. Again, we'll get more into that, into story and that stuff. But again, I love the design. I love the long blonde hair. Love the big boobs. But then again, I'm an ecchi fan. This is an ecchi series. So of course, I love the fact any characters that have big boobs. But again, I love sort of that. That's another part of her design that's very interesting. It, again, same thing with Musubi, you get it with Kasahana and some of the others is who later become his secretary, though Kasahana and Homaru don't in this series. But sort of that wifey aspect, you know, sort of that lover aspect of them, I think is also portrayed in their design. Speaking of Kasahana, we don't get to see much of her in the series. She's only pretty much half the series, and she doesn't become merged or become Minato's secretary in the series. But, you know, she is a pretty prominent character. Kasahana, the resident MILF, as we should say. And kiddies, if you don't know what that word means, do not go ask your parents. Please. But no, and I love sort of the dark purple and how that's representative of her personality. I love the how her hair looks and the wind and everything. Just, it's all representative of this sort of floating personality that just rides with the wind, which is perfect, I think, representation of Kazuhana's personality. Homaru, again, color scheme, black and white here, but at the same point in time, it is more representative of sort of his determination, I think. Just sort of what he is, because, you know, he does fall into different categories. But, you know, I like him. I like that he's different. And that's something else I like about the series. They, not every Sekiri is this buxom, big-breasted women. You know, there are Sekiris with small breasts. There are Sekiris with big breasts. There are Sekiris that are guys, that are pretty boys and handsome and Bishonen, like that. I love that about this series. And I love that you have all these different character designs, which can be very hard when you have to create 108 unique people. But that's getting more into the others. Moving on to Mia, I love sort of the matriotic aspect of her design. Whether it be her design when, you know, she's in the Maison Izumo house, or whether they're showing her in flashbacks. Either way, there's always this matriotic, you know, sort of leader aspect in the way they move her, in the way her design. I think the soft colors of white and purple definitely match that. And I very much enjoy her design. It's just a joy to watch. And then we have Uzume, who's just this fun-loving design with the star, you know, the way she's dressed with that sort of star shirt, that seemingly stylish shirt. You know, she's sort of that every girl aspect that you expect to meet at the mall or something like that. And I think that also helps viewers, you know, endear themselves to her character, considering what's going to happen to her character down the line in later series. You know, they do a great job within the design of endearing you to her character. And, you know, she sort of represents the audience to say, you know, wow, you got another one. You're a machine. Yeah, I love that. Again, that's getting more to come, but I just love that. And then for the others, you know, Minato, you know, the MBI president, Minato's mother who's working for MBI, you know, all the designs, I think, match the personalities of the characters. And they're very, very good. And, you know, overall, when it comes to the character designs, like I said, I think they all match characters' personality, and they do a really, really good job. You know, they're all unique. They're all different. You know, this is one thing to where I can see a character design, and, you know, you just know it's from this series. You could put Musubi in sort of normal clothes, and I'd know, oh, yeah, she's from this series. Just because of how unique, you know, sort of the character designs are. Moving on to special effects. Obviously, the special effects were done with computers, and this can be sort of the thing. At some places, I don't want to say obvious, because it is obvious, but it's not obvious in the way like, oh, it's god-awful, so it's obvious it's CGI. But this, in some places, there's sort of lining that, like, with water and some of the lightning. When combined with sort of the soft style that the backgrounds and the other stuff is in, it's really a bright contrast. And it's not that, again, it's not that it's bad. It's just that some of the coloring on the special effects are, you know, are just so bright that it creates such a different contrast. This is actually something I think they get better with on the second season. And that's something they improve on. And that shows that, you know, again, they improve on the series, which we'll get to next week. But here, you know, the color contrast, I think, for a lot of when they use weather effects, or should I say when they use elemental effects like lightning and water and fire, it has such a bright contrast to sort of the soft color contrast that the rest of the series is in. And it kind of makes it obvious, yeah, this is done in computers. That being said, the effects aren't bad, you know, dust and that stuff, and it's very well done, and it makes me believe in that this stuff is actually happening. I mean, that's just the only bad thing about the special effects is sort of the color contrast. Backgrounds are just gorgeous. I love looking, again, because I love this sort of soft color look. It's just so unique. It's really something I haven't seen in any other anime, and I just enjoy it so much because it's different. I really don't think you can find another anime that has sort of a similar artistic style here. And it's very, very enjoyable. With that, let's move on to acting. And of course, we're going to start with protagonist acting. Joe McDonald, I think, does a wonderful job portraying Minato. He has this sort of wonderful, sort of soft personality. Again, Minato is this very smart character. He just lacks confidence. And that's something that Joe does a wonderful job of portraying. You know, he is sort of that everyman. You know, a lot of times when I talk about Spider-Man, you know, I talk about how Peter Parker is like the perfect harem series candidate. Because really, that's what it is. It's about the everyman. When you look at the most successful harem animes, no matter how, whether the character has a more regal look or whatever, whether in like Princess Lover or something in Negima or here, either way, the best harem animes, there is a sense of the everyman in that main character. You know, in the way he acts, the way he acts sensible, the way he acts on common sense, you see that here in Minato, and Joe McDonald does a wonderful job bringing that out, and I commend him. And again, he just, I think, endears you to the character. Alexis Tipton as Musubi is a wonderful job. You know, and again, we saw her as sort of the main love interest last week with Hibiji. That was more of a shy, yet bright personality here. Alexis does a great, and these two voices are different. I mean, same tone, but again, different voices. And part of that is Alexis just has this bubbly personality that she's able to draw out through her voice and give to Musubi. And it's wonderful to watch. You know, this is bubbly, exploring attitude, joyful, sort of couldn't really harm a fly, but if you piss her off, you know, she'll fight for what she believes in. But, you know, she, that sort of, like, I'm about to get into something that's more story, so I'll sort of wait on that. But again, wonderful job by Alexis Tipton of bringing out this bubbly personality. Tia Ballard does a wonderful job playing Kusuno. Again, just this cute voice that just makes Kusuno adorable. You know, you really find yourself going, aww, how cute. And Tia Ballard does a wonderful job portraying the voice of character. And it's just a, there's a particular scene, again, I'll probably talk more about it when comedy, but there's a scene where they bring Skumi back to the house for the first time. She says, I'm wife, and they have this funny little scene. And there's a part where Kusuno is like throwing her leg at Skumi, trying to, you know, get her away, and she goes, you know, I bring this up because that's one of my favorite scenes in the series, one of my favorite bits. And in the original Japanese version, you know, the actress goes, and Tia did something different that made that scene her own. And it just really stands out to me, and I very much enjoy it. Colleen Klinkenbeard as Matsu, wow. You know, again, for most of us, we most know her as sort of the straight-edge, hard-nosed Risa Hawkeye. And this is a really different role than that, and she did a wonderful job on it. And just, you could tell she had absolute fun with this character, because she brought fun into this character. You know, I think if there's anybody else that didn't bring fun into this character, you know, the character wouldn't work, at least on the dub. But here, it works. You know, she really brings out exactly what this character should sound like. And again, you gotta remember, before this was dubbed, I watched this when it came out of Japan. I watched it on Crunchyroll, I watched it on Hulu, I watched the fan subs on Hulu. So I had seen the Japanese version many times before I seen the dub. So I kind of had a sense of what the Japanese voices were and what they should have gone with the English voices. And I'll say this right now. I think they matched all the voices pretty much perfectly. You know, when you watch Japanese fan sub, or when you watch a Japanese version with fan subs of a good series, and they have great voices, and you have what you expect of the English voices, and they do it perfectly, you know, what should happen is that it endears you so much to that dub that you can't envision yourself watching anything other than the dub now after that. And they do that here. Voices are perfect here. But, again, let's get back to protagonists. Lita McKay, Tsukumi, God, I love these. You know what? Great choice to go with Shakespearean English. You know, and again, the original Japanese version, you know, Tsukumi's character talked old Japanese. And I think it was sort of a perfect compliment to, you know, match that by having an English version, her doing Shakespearean English. Which, by the way, I'm going to use some of these lines next time I go dining or clubbing. You know, next time I'm in the club and I'm trying to pick up a girl, I'm going, hey, you want to sleep cocooned? I just wonder if that will work. With that idea, that's one of my favorite lines. Like, it is a woman's place to share bath and birth. Birth? You loggerhead. That is when a man and a woman sleep cocooned. I love that. I love it. It makes me laugh so hard. And you know, Lita McKay and Alexis Hampton, they did that scene perfectly with a straight... It's kind of like that... about to sort of compare Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but that scene early in the film where the... I'm blanking on her name, but the... Diner Woman character, love interest of Eddie, goes, a tune killed his brother, dropped a piano on his head, and did it with such a straight face. It's awesome. But Stephanie Young as Kazahana, God, I love the voice. Again, wonderful job of portraying a sense of maturity within Kazahana, you know, and yet at the same time, a sort of childish attitude at the same time. Leia Clark, just very... Being that she's playing a guy, really, we're going to see why she does such a great job with her voice in next season's series, which, again, we're doing next week. But for the most part, she sticks to pretty much the same sort of regal, sort of guardian type of character. And she has to do mostly a male voice, and she does a great job. You know, I didn't expect this to be a girl. And when I found it, like, wow, wonderful job by Leia Clark. Monica Rial, who always does a wonderful job. Again, I talked earlier about that matriotic feel to Mia's character. And Monica Rial, you know, she has this very sort of high-pitched voice. And yet she does this wonderful job sort of toning it down just a bit and bringing out this sort of matriotic sort of leader aspect within her character. That, again, and more importantly, when, you know, Mia is, you know, mad and sort of that demon aspect of her. Like, we won't be fighting now, shall we? No. I love that. It's just a great job. And then again, Jamie Marchi as Uzume does a wonderful job of just portraying this every girl that you expect to meet at the mall. And just great personality and... sort of the way she goes up and down again with sort of the more serious moments of her character in this series. It's so interesting one. She does a great job with it. And that's pretty much it for the protagonists. Pretty much the only antagonist is Chuck Huber as Minika. And we have some others and we'll get to them. But as for Minita, just that wacky... scientist, mad scientist type of character is really the best way to describe his character. And, yeah, it's... I just love sort of the fun he brings into the character. I mean, he really plays it like this mad scientist. I'm the Game Master, and you are gonna do it. I mean, he's like this DC-list mad scientist villain in a Superman comic. Superman, you've got to play my game. You've got to reach the Bell Tower in 5 minutes in Tokyo, and if you don't, these people die. That sort of mad scientist, he is absolutely outside his mind, and yet you still get sort of the sense of what he's thinking, and it's never too far off. It's sort of that same thing that, Heath Ledger. I was blanking on a name. Heath Ledger did with the Joker. You know, Joker was just this insane person, but his mindset was never too far off that you couldn't understand what he was thinking. You knew he was insane, you thought he was insane, but it was never that far off. Sort of the same thing here. You never think he's too far off, but again, just a funny insanity to his character that I very much enjoy. And then really the only other, you have the Discipline Squad, you know, that can be serious and they do a great job. Anita Nuclear and Connie Harper. But the real other protagonist is Christine Etienne, who plays Casabara, who number 4, the Black Secretary, who's part of the Discipline Squad. Just such an unconforming voice. And what I mean by that is, you know, she has this softness and, like, the way she's able in one moment make the voice seem kind of soft and kind of friendly and then turn psycho in a second. I thought that was a wonderful, wonderful job in the portraying of that character. So with that, we are going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about story. So here's another promo from another great podcast. And when we come back, we're going to get into story.
In June of 1962, a superhero unlike any other made his first appearance in the pages of Amazing Fantasy number 15, the final issue of that series. 6 months later, this character would receive his own title, and from there he would grow in popularity and be adapted into several animated series, a handful of live-action series, both in the U.S. and abroad, have countless action figures made in his likeness, dominate the cinema screen, and much, much more. It is fair to say that the Amazing Spider-Man is a pop culture icon and a fictional character that people all over the world identify with and love. This year, Spider-Man is turning 50, and Views from the Long Box, an internet radio series hosted by me, Michael Bailey, is going to celebrate the wall crawler in a series of episodes focusing on various aspects of the character's existence. Together with such podcasting luminaries as Brad Douglas, Andrew Leyland, John Wilson, and Scott Gardner, I'm going to give Spidey the biggest birthday card a comic fan could. He may not be my favorite character, but I like him a great deal, and he deserves the spotlight in this, his 50th year. Views from the Long Box can be found at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. New episodes hit every Friday. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytooth production in association with the DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy.
And we're back, and let's talk about story. First, let's go over the main plot, and, you know, let's go over the connections that the secretaries have with their Ascicabies. It's one of those things where one of the sort of the underlying themes of the series is definitely sort of love and sort of the connection of love and everything. And I think matching it with sort of this tournament of the gods and trying to find out who is the best one, whose wish can be accomplished, is really an interesting connection to make, considering sort of the, you know, all things are fair in love and war. But, you know, I think one of the best things is that they do really concentrate on the connection that the secretaries have with the Ascicabies. And again, each one is different because, again, one of the things that they do great with, again, Minato is, again, like I said, he's the everyman. And how each of the different Zacharies are able to connect with him because of the different things he does. You know, just being who he is, you know, connecting or connecting with Musubi and why she became his secretary. Sort of the very protective big brother attitude that Kusuno connected to. Again, the ability to stand up for what he believes in that attracted Tsukune. And then again, the same thing, that sort of mystery aspect of him that interested Matsu. Each of them have a different reason for wanting to be his secretary, and all are sort of drawn to, you know, his great personality that he doesn't let out sometimes. Because again, his one problem as a character is, you know, he lacks confidence. When he finally gains that confidence, that draws these characters to him. And I do love sort of the main plot that really goes over the connection each secretary has with their Asakabi and what they're willing to do to try to help them win this game, which is really the main plot. For that matter, I very, very much enjoy it. And it does also help the comedy a bit. On to, you know, the secretary plan itself, you know, the plan itself lends itself to being very, you know, these people having to battle each other just to be with the person they love the most. Sort of the, it sort of represents sort of the brutality of reality, shall we say. You know, a lot of times people are in love with other people, but things happen that just, the brutality of reality doesn't allow them to be together. And that's what sort of this plan represents to an extent. It's sort of that brutality of reality. Again, you have this sort of really mad, insane douchebag who's just playing this game just because he enjoys it. And it doesn't matter how many lives he's ruined or anything like that, you know, to the point to where they're taking over a complete city just to do it. So I think on that standpoint, it makes the plan that much serious. It allows for an ebb and flow, and we'll probably talk more about this with Pace, but an ebb and flow between the comedy and the action. Speaking of comedy, let's move on to the comedy and the fan service. I love the comedy in this series. Yeah, again, you have your ecchi moments, and you have your fan service moments, your ecchi fan service moments, but there are other fan service moments. Like, there is a scene where Musubi is in the shower. And I have to ask Alyssa Tipson about this. Because I don't know if she just did this on her own, or if somebody gave her the idea. I just want to know who came up with the idea so I can shake their hands and thank them. But there's a scene in one of the first three episodes where, and I believe it is the third episode. It's either the third or the second, but I do believe it's the third. But where they're finishing cleaning out the apartment they're moving out of, and Musubi's in the shower, and she's humming. And she's humming a very particular tune to me, because the tune that she goes, hmm, 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 ha, 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 ha. You know, I'm sorry. I don't know if any of you noticed that tune. I noticed that tune. that sounds like the Freakazoid theme song to me. Whoever had that idea, I want to shake their hands and thank them. But I mean, again, that sort of fanboy, I noticed, wow, she's humming the Freakazoid theme. That's freaking awesome. I mean, in a show that really doesn't have any pop culture references in it, pretty much. But again, a lot of the comedy is this sort of classic harem comedy. You know, to get sort of all these girls being after one guy. It really starts when Tsukumi comes along, and you know, I'm his wife. And again, just the hilariousness of Linda talking in the old Shakespearean English. You know, I'm his wife, and all you tramps must go away. And just the real, and again, like I said, that scene to Ariel, she first comes in, and just, I'm his wife, and then they go to Kusuno and Musubi, and there's fire between them, and then it rages, and which goes, wife? And she has her hands on her chin looking at it, green, and she was Kusuno hopping along, da-da-da, da-da-da, grabbing a hold of his legs and, like, swatting grabbing a hold of Minato and swatting at Tsukumi, and they're yelling, and goes, and then Minato goes, something wrong? Musubi is like, no, but I just found out I'm your wife too. And it says, we'll fight for him. And then later goes, when Susie introduces herself again, when, you know, there's this whole conversation about how Mia knew about the second plan, goes, I'm his wife. You see Musubi jumping in the background going, boink, 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 but I'm his wife too. And not boing, 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 boink, boink, boink. They're not showing her breast bouncing. They're showing her bouncing. And just that, again, that bubbly. And it goes for Scooby too. There's this comedy out of both of them to sort of the obliviousness that they both sometimes have. They never show them as stupid, but they show them sometimes as obliviousness. Or, you know, I should say oblivious. Especially for Musubi when she gets in a fight. You know, she just sees fighting as this thing. You know, wow, Sekiris are made to fight. I love the fight. Let's fight! Again, one of my favorite scenes. It's the episode entitled The Veil and the Wind, I believe. And they're trying to save the frail Sekiris who can use her voice. But, you know, so Skumi's fighting the veil, and Musubi's, and that's when the Kazahana comes in. It's not fair, and she goes, this is supposed to be one-on-one, right? Skumi looks behind her, and there's Musubi. Go fight that Sekiri. Okay! I'm number 88. Let's fight! Just not a care in the world. It makes me now know how my mom feels sometime around me. And then you have Kusuno, who's absolutely adorable and cute. And her actions and maxions and stuff like that around everybody are just so cute and adorable. The OVA that comes with this season is Kusuno's first shopping trip. Is absolutely hilarious. It's adorable. It's cute. And this is something I think people need to understand about anime fans, is we don't like dark stuff. Oh, we love our serious storylines and everything like that, but, you know, a lot of stuff that comes out in Japan is more bright, cheerful, and, you know, sort of cute and adorable, and there's a reason. People in Japan love cute and bright and that stuff, and we do too, but we live in a society that tries to demonize liking cute stuff sometimes as being abnormal for adults, and it doesn't make any sense. People around the world love cute and adorable stuff, and it doesn't question your manhood. It doesn't make you abnormal. There's no sexual thing connected to it. People just love watching cute, adorable things happen because it's just, it brings uplifting feelings to your heart, and it makes you feel good about yourself. And we see that with Kusuno, just the cute little things. When she's in a little wagtail outfit or just a little mouse, she's just adorable and cute. It's no different than something you'd find on America's Funniest Home Videos. Matsu's sort of pervertiness can be really hilarious at times. And, you know, overall, I love the comedy. It makes me laugh a lot in this series. And that's really a great segue into the next point, which is the series pace. There is a serious storyline in this show, but there's very good comedy, and there's a great pace and a great flow between the comedy and the serious part of this story. But the other part of that is that for this series, it really helps it that it has this flow. I don't think you can have too much more comedy. I do kind of don't like that there's only 13 episodes, but I think for what we get, because the pace and the flow, it fits perfectly. And again, going back to that series part, the fights, which is our next point. The fights in this series are excellent. You know, they're not too long, they're not too short. They're a couple of minutes, but at the same point in time, they really do a great job of showing off each Sekiri's, you know, powers and everything. And again, it also has some great music that goes along. Da, 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 da. There's some great music that really enhances the feel of these fight scenes, and I very much enjoy them. And I love how they show off each character's abilities, and I just think the fights are, they're not on the scale of like Avengers or Power Rangers, where it's epic and the epitome of win, but they're very good fights and they make the show work. They're exactly what the show needs. You don't need a fight on the epicness of Avengers in a series sometimes. You just need fights that make the series work, and it does a great job here. Really, the last point I can talk about is that this series is an introduction to the Sekiri series. Mind you, this is a manga. I think it's like on, it's like in the 200s of the volumes right now, as far as chapters. I mean, it's like chapter 200 something. But this series really introduces you to this world of Sekiri and what's going to happen. And again, it's that there's a lot of buildup in this season that really helps when you go into the second season. If it wasn't for some of the buildup that happens in this season, you wouldn't understand some things and some integral aspects that happen in the second season. So I very much like this. I love the fact that this entire season really is a build-up and really is an introduction to these characters and who they are. And it makes you just fall in love with them. So overall, when I look at this series, it's a wonderful series. I very much highly suggest this series for absolutely anybody. I know I enjoyed it immensely. So overall rating for Sekiri is a 4.5 out of 5. There are a few things here and there I don't like. Really the big one, again, being that sort of contrast discrepancy of colors between the special effects of, like, I'm blanking on the word here, and I apologize. Like the lightning effects and the weather effects and the elemental effects during the fights. That color sort of difference there between the special effects and sort of the overall style of the artwork is really the big thing that comes to mind. And while it doesn't take me out of the series by any means, it doesn't ruin my enjoyment, it is something. So 4.5 out of 5 for me for Sekiri. Wonderful series. I highly suggest that everybody pick it up. You can find the series on Netflix with the dub, mind you. I also know it's on Hulu. And, you know, pretty much the box set, you know, it's $40 to $44. In fact, I saw it for $39.99 at Best Buy a couple weeks ago. So they're actually coming down with a price, and I think that's pretty much a decent price. I mean, I paid $45 for the Sekiri Pure Engagement Blu-ray DVD double pack. And mind you, that is something else they're doing, which I understand, and I actually am very proud of that Funimation is doing, is they're starting to do these Blu-ray DVD double packs for pretty much the same price that they were selling of, like, you know, $44. That I can respect because that's more content to an extent. Very much enjoy that. And pretty much that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments you want to send my way, any fan mail, email, hate mail, anything you want to say about the show, there are several ways you can do it. You can leave us a comment on Facebook by searching out the Absolution Network on Facebook. You can also email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. Or it's just that you remember to put Tom's Prerogative in the show title so I know for Tom's Prerogative. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, while you're there, check out all our other friends. Check out the Random Red Box Reviews. And, of course, check out all my other podcasts and sites that are part of 132 Productions. Like Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, where I review every Godzilla movie ever made. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, which features Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and the Comic Book Ditch. You can find all of that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of my sites, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site that do wonderful, wonderful podcasts. Check them out. People like Michael Bailey, Fuse from the Long Box, and From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Spector's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Friends! And of course, all our other friends, you can find them on the sidebar on the site, check them out. They do really good stuff. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative, My Toonami Generation. Until next time, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.